welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lowdown / Lounge. It's like that weird pseudo type of episode because it is a Friday, because it is a day that I'm sure a lot of Lakers fans are probably pretty excited about. I am on here. I basically cleared the day again. I basically cleared the last 2 days to be able to hop on the air as soon as this information or this report dropped. The Lakers have, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, and the sources that I've spoken to since, fired Darvin Ham. His tenure ends after a tumultuous second season. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about the decision, why it took so long, the direction that they go in next, but also importantly, how we got here. I know I've been promising an article that was going to drop as soon as this information dropped. That is still the plan as soon as I can get a hold of my editor. So, apologies for that poorly timed delay. But yeah, I am again the Lakers insider for Lakers Daily. And on this episode, at least right now, unless people, I did send out the link to a couple people and maybe they hop on, maybe they don't. But as it stands right now, the plan is to offer you up the most information that I can give you as it stands right now. And let's go ahead and get to it. So, first and foremost, this week, basically, the Lakers have, I'm not going to go so far as to call it that they've been deliberating. Essentially, before, this was last Thursday when I first wrote the piece in preparation for the Lakers to potentially get swept. I wrote that the if the Lakers got swept, it would have been on a Friday or no, maybe. Yeah, I forget how the days would have played out. Whenever they played game four, they would have fired him the next day. And then Rob Pelinka would sit in for a press conference to discuss the decision and then to preview the offseason, right? And discuss the season that was essentially his exit interview. The Lakers didn't want to come off as callous here on this decision. They wanted to, they wanted to at least appear to have learned from the Frank Vogel debacle, essentially. And they, as a result, they sat on this decision for a little bit. It wasn't a matter of, there was this grand debate internally about this. We knew that this was coming as soon as the season ended, however it was going to end. And, they basically sat on it for PR. And I understand it. I obviously recognize the value in PR. I think that they could have handled this better anyway, but look, they love the good old Friday news dump and they decided to dump this news on a Friday. As far as Darvin in particular, all week, essentially he's been kind of waiting for this update or this call that he was going to have with Rob Pelinka too. As Aaron kind of mentioned yesterday on the show, he did meet with players after the season ended. Those conversations, I think are best kind of left privately, but from what I can tell, it was still amicable and he and the players just kind of are going to move on with their lives, and he and the Lakers are going to move on with their lives. I kind of feel for the guy, and we'll do some analysis on his tenure here in a little bit. I don't think that this should be his last crack at getting a head coaching gig. I hope he learns from all of this. I think he needs to learn about how to build out an assistant coaching staff. I think he needs to recognize some of his own shortcomings, and I think he needs to learn accountability. Like in talking to people over the last week about what his tenure was like and what quote unquote went wrong, you could talk about the rotation decisions. You could talk about the inconsistent strategies and you can talk about lineups and all that stuff. But from what I've been able to gather, the stuff that really kind of rubbed people the most wrong or the you know, annoyed people the most was a bit of a fall off in communication and you know, that again, that consistent lack of accountability when he would, you know, a lot of times point at the players and, you know, their energy level, their commitment level to the game plan and all of these things. And, you know, I, again, if this piece drops and where are you? But like, if in talking to people, kind of the final straw when everybody knew what was coming was when he had that back and forth with Anthony Davis and, you know, publicly agreed to disagree with AD. That was when the people who otherwise felt like he was probably gone, for the most part, knew he was probably gone. That was the last kind of prideful foot in the sand, you know, all toes down type moment for Darvin, where he was just like, you know what, I'm gone anyway. I want to go out on my terms, and I want to go out with the belief that I am doing a good job here. Unfortunately, the players and the Lakers seem pretty clearly to have disagreed. Before I get to some of the intel, and I'm trying to hold off as long as I possibly can for contractual purposes, but I do want to talk a little bit about Darvin Ham, the head coach, and where I think the Lakers kind of screwed him. Remember, when they hired him, one, he was a rookie head coach, coaching a LeBron James team with championship aspirations, and the Lakers didn't put a former head coach on his coaching staff, right? That to me felt like the most obvious thing to do here, just to provide a first-time head coach, even though he was a former player and even though he had been an assistant coach for as long as he had. I think you benefit from having a former head coach, especially a head coach who, you know, was just recently a head coach. You benefit from having that coach there just to be able to like understand or have that coach help you understand what NBA players kind of, you know, expect from their head coach. So first and foremost, one thing that players, you know, according to sources all season, really were frustrated by was just the complete lack of consistency for most of them with their roles. They, you know, an NBA player and professional athletes in general, they are creatures of habit, and they, you know, they want to show up to the gym at a certain time, get up a certain number of shots, you know, be done with that workout is, you know, when they can. And when the game starts, they want to know when they're usually going to go in, when they're usually going to come out, who they're normally going to be playing with, what their expectations are going to be while they're out there on the court. And that was just not the case with this Lakers team. It was a lot of, well, sometimes I'm going in here, and then sometimes I'm going in then, and then sometimes I'm coming out here, and sometimes I'm playing with that guy, sometimes I'm not, and sometimes I'm expected to be a facilitator, and sometimes I'm expected to score. And there was just a complete lack of consistency for the vast majority of the roster, right? Yeah. The same things were normally asked of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, right? But just about everybody else had their roles kind of jumbled all year. And I know that, like, after the season, another quote that Darvin Ham gave that, you know, again, signified that the end was near. But he said, you know, how can you expect consistency from the lineups and all of that stuff when you have a starter play like shit for 10 games? Again, I thought that was directed at Austin, somebody who, as I reported earlier this season, that relationship between Darvin and Austin was just always kind of weird, kind of off, according to people close to that situation. A lot of people kind of spent a lot of time wondering this year why Darvin doesn't seem to mess with Austin the way that he should. And, you know, that quote, though, is, again, it excuses Darvin for his own deficiencies. And I think if a former head coach was there last season and this season to say, hey, man, that they're going to expect, you know, this guy's going to expect this. This guy, you know, is a little annoyed because he isn't getting this kind of minutes and or this kind of role, or you know, he's guarding a certain player on a certain night and a different player on another night, and defensively there just isn't the consistency that we need, and those kinds of things that a head coach would know from experience. That type of feedback from the assistant coaching staff just wasn't there, and I think that was kind of the first place that the Lakers, well, no, not the first place, one of the first places that the Lakers kind of screwed Darvin. The first place, the actual first place that the Lakers screwed Darvin Ham and I think kind of positioned him to fail was, remember, he took over and interviewed and I guess interviewed well because he promised the Lakers that he was going to be able to make Russell Westbrook work, which was always, you know, if that's a line in questioning, you know, for that round of that coaching search there, that in and of itself speaks to the lack of, you know, reality involved with the coaching search process that went on there, right? If if you're firing Frank Vogel because he can't make Russell Westbrook work, and you're not at any point looking internally as to why Russell Westbrook isn't working and what it might not have, how it might not have anything to do with coaching anyway, that's a you problem. That's a Rob Pelinka problem. That's a Jeannie Buss problem. That's a Rambai problem and everybody else who is involved in those decisions. If you are firing a coach because he wasn't able to make Russell Westbrook work and then hiring a coach with the anticipation that that guy is going to revolutionize the game in a way that would allow Russell Westbrook to operate at a high level, making $47 million on your cap books, like, that's just not going to work out. And remember, they start 2-10 that year, and they basically toil in mediocrity or worse for the vast majority of that season. Then they finally trade Russell Westbrook, and the team takes off. And again, I thought that Darvin did a very good job keeping guys focused all, you know, throughout that. And positioned them well to be able to take off once Russell Westbrook was no longer on the team. And obviously they reached the Western Conference Finals last year. Even still, I still had some issues with how he handled some of the rotations and some of the decisions and stuff like that. But it, like, honestly, it was so blissful to watch a Lakers team that didn't have that anchor on it anymore, that you just kind of lived with whatever else was going on. They were playing better basketball and you were happy to see it. And I think that was, I think that kind of blinded the Lakers, myself included, from the actual job that he did last year. And I think didn't necessarily prepare them for some of the mistakes that he was probably getting ready to make this season. The other thing too, as you know, while I talk about Russell Westbrook for a second, the Lakers had the opportunity last summer to trade Russell Westbrook, and I believe they would have had to move both of their first rounders, but you would have gotten back Mike Conley and you would have gotten back a bunch of stuff, and that would have allowed you to go into the season without Russell Westbrook on your books, without him in your training camp, and it would have allowed you to put together a roster that didn't have so many combo guards, because remember, the Lakers put together a roster with so many guards because they anticipated trading Russell Westbrook and losing that amount of on-ball creativity, right? And if that, you know, as that was their plan, and given how long it took to execute that plan, you basically had, you had Patrick Beverley as your small forward, emphasis on small. You had Austin Reeves basically never able to spend any time on the ball because there was such a crazy pecking order ahead of him. So, like, right from the get-go, I thought that between, you know, not having Darvin, you know, a rookie head coach, have a former head coach on his coaching staff, and with the Russell Westbrook debacle at the beginning of the year and the decision not to trade him so that you can give your rookie head coach or you know, it's not that you're giving him a head start, but you're not, like, strapping a parachute to him when the season did start, right? And so I thought that, you know, all things considered, and this is why I have that video also up on YouTube, and I think I posted it to Twitter a few weeks back, but nowhere in here have we heard anything at all about Rob Pelinka facing any kind of accountability for this, right? And we'll see what kind of questions that he faces. I've thought that the beat have done a very, very good job at holding his feet to the fire in these moments, because again, I don't think he should be the guy who hires their next head coach. And we'll talk about the candidates that we've already seen leaked, and I'll offer whatever intel I have on that front as well. But yeah, I tend to think that, you know, Darvin, again, the reason I believe that Darvin deserves another shot is I would like to see him in this kind of position, without having to operate in an organization as clunky as the Lakers currently are. Here's another way that I'll put it. Remember a few years back, like for a while there, it was a nice, like trendy, position to hold for coaches, where you would have the head coach slash GM combination, right? I think Tom Thibodeau had that position. Stan Van Gundy held that position. Greg Popovich kind of sort of did, but he mostly works with RC Buford. But I'm sure there are other, Doc Rivers held that position. And all of those examples, aside from Pop, who again works with RC Buford, all of those examples of the coach slash GM combination failed hilariously. They did not go well. And I want you to think about that, because again, the picture that I've had painted for me in terms of how Rob Pelinka and Darvin Ham operated, they essentially, I've been told, would gather all this data and all of this scouting and all of this information, and then it would be Rob and Ham who would go into a room together, and they would make the final decision on how the roster would play out. And one example of that, right, the one that really set people off, was Jovan Buha reporting that the Lakers at one point considered trading Taurean Prince, and then Darvin Ham was the person who stepped up and really vouched for Prince and said, no, I don't want to trade him. And so it's not quite apples to apples. It isn't quite, you know, a coach slash GM combo, but when your coach has that much input over the roster, that is going to draw his awareness elsewhere. And it also, like, what I never really understood is, all right, if that's the case, and I'm not alone. Again, this is something that hopefully soon will run for Lakers Daily. I was told that one of the things that really confused people internally here with the Lakers was, they saw how that team was put together. They saw how those decisions would get made, and then didn't understand how Darvin would be there for those conversations and then just like not play the guys that the Lakers most heavily invested in the ways that he needed to, right? Rui Hachimura was in and out of the starting lineup and only finally rejoined the starting lineup for good, you know, almost 70% of the way through the season. Austin Reeves was benched at one point. D'Angelo Russell was benched at one point. And like, this is where that, you know, internal confusion existed, or, you know, where it was really hammered home was like, wait, we see how they're doing this. Why is he like, and then also there was kind of some internal wondering, like, when's Rob going to step up and say like, hey, have you considered playing these guys? And again, like, I'm a Dodgers fan, and I know that with the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman will have input on how players are utilized. And at the very least, he'll ask questions as to why isn't so-and-so being used in this way or whatever. And, you know, with the Lakers, that communication just didn't quite exist. And, you know, I think that lack of communication really hurt the Lakers over the course of the season, where, you know, I think it could have the decisions and the decision-making process could have used an extra set of eyes to be like, hey, those guys are our best players, but you should maybe find ways to utilize them. And, instead of being blinded by the things that they can't do, why not try to find ways to prop up the things that they do well, right? Because there are things that Rui Hachimura does well. There are things that Jared Vanderbilt does well. There are things that D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves do well. And rather than bench them for not being able to do the things that Darvin Ham would have liked for those guys to be able to do, you know, he needed to find ways to get more out of those guys rather than just kind of give up on them and stop relying so much on lesser players. So I don't know. As much as I think that Darvin was not ready for this moment and this opportunity, I also think that those issues were compounded by the lack of steady support from the front office. That does, however, bring us to Darvin himself, right? And again, I talked about the lack of accountability and how every time that, you know, a moment called for him kind of at least acknowledging that he could have done more here, any time that the questions would swirl back to or circle back to the roster decisions or the rotation decisions or the lineup decisions that he was making that was hurting the Lakers, anytime that came up, it was no, it can't be us. It's we got to be more focused. We got to be more disciplined. We got to be grittier. We got to run faster. We got to jump higher. We got to screenier, whatever it is. And, that to me was the foundational flaw to how, to where all of this went wrong. And, if you were to ask me, and I'm sure I'll probably do radio hits and all that other stuff in the next few days or so, when I'm asked where did this all go wrong, that to me is the big one, because every other problem that Darvin had or every other issue that Darvin ran into started with the fundamental disbelief that he could possibly make a mistake. And I know, like, he might say one thing publicly and it might be a different thing privately. And I think there is some of that, right? Like, I do think there were some instances over the course of the last 2 years where with certain players, he would say, oh yeah, I maybe could have done this better. Oh yeah, I could have maybe done that better. Like with LeBron and AD, if they had questions, he would take their input into account. But if just about anybody else had notes or wondered what was going on wherever, they tended to fall on deaf ears. And that lack of accountability, communication breakdown that kind of existed there between him and anybody who wasn't LeBron and AD, that was the bigger problem. And everything kind of fell into the wrong place after that. All right, so I am good. I'm getting note from my editor at Lakers Daily that the article I've been talking about is going to be going up here pretty soon. So once that is up, I will I'll throw that in the link, or I'll throw that link into the comments so that if you would like to read that, you can. But anyway, the other place, obviously, where things kind of fell apart for Darvin was with that core from last year. And one bit of information that should be running here pretty soon, again, that is going to be published onto Lakers Daily, is all training camp, all summer, coming off of the loss to the Denver Nuggets last year, the belief internally, the belief that the players had, the belief even with some on the coaching staff was, we are only going to go as far as last year's core can take us, you know, and that'll get us at least to the trade deadline. And at that point, we'll know what tweaks need to be made, right? And so all training camp, those six guys thought five of us are going to be starting. And it basically came down to either Rui or Vanderbilt who would start the year in that starting five. And I know, again, I will acknowledge that I vouched for Taurean Prince at the beginning of the year. I thought that, you know, his shooting would help, and I thought that his foot speed would maybe help at the small forward spot, but it didn't work. You know, very clearly it didn't work, and it took forever. It took way too long for them to acknowledge that it wasn't working. But importantly, for that core six guys last year, not counting Max Christie, because Darvin Ham never counted Max Christie, but not counting Max Christie, those six guys, LeBron, AD, D'Lo, Austin, Rui, and Vando, those six guys thought they were going to make up the vast majority of the minutes in the rotation. And certainly the starting five would be made up of that group, right? Or five of those members of that group. And so when Taurean Prince started at the very beginning of the year, that was the first time, and this is again from game one, that was the first time that that core and people internally started looking around like, hold on, who? What? Because again, everybody else basically was on the same page. You know, short of Darvin Ham, and I've heard that Chris Gent was on board with starting Taurean Prince. And just about everybody else, though, was and the other members of that of the assistant coaching staff too. But those were the two key proponents for Taurean Prince were Darvin and Chris Gent. And you know, it really surprised at the very very least those six guys in that locker room. And you know, didn't that decision really kind of set them off on the wrong foot at the very, very beginning of the year? And then when that group wasn't working and they were kind of toiling in mediocrity there, and Darvin Ham's first inclination was to bench Austin, not Taurean to bring in Vando, not Taurean to bring in Rui or whatever. And I think there were some injury issues there too. But when Darvin's first adjustment was to bench Austin, who is very popular in that locker room, that's when things really started speeding up in terms of that disbelief with that core group and Darvin Ham. And then finally, I'm told that the moment that this really reached a point of no return was that lineup that I ironically broke, right? Where Darvin benched all three of D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, and Rui Hachimura to have a starting lineup of Taurean Prince, Cam Reddish, Jared Vanderbilt, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. And that was the moment, according to the people that I've spoken to, where there was just no coming back from that. They looked at Ham as somebody who was very clearly searching desperately for answers that he was not capable of finding, in large part because, and a lot of people believe that he was just really kind of stubborn and pot committed to not relying on that group from last year. And by the time he finally did start rolling with those guys a little bit more, it was borderline begrudgingly that he did so. And that was, and again, that's not me saying this. That's how people internally felt about that. That when he finally started relying and he finally inserted Rui Hachimura into the starting five, it was like, whatever, we'll try this, I guess. And those guys, you know, felt that that was the vibe that came off of them. And when they started succeeding, that made it all the more kind of frustrating to them, where they were like, we told you, right? Like, we told you how this was going to go. And if you relied on us more, and that's, you know, that's why you saw the frustration that you saw a lot of times on the bench from not just LeBron, not just Anthony Davis, but for the vast majority of guys sitting there in you know, on the bench during timeouts and during breaks of play, where they, you know, Darvin had his typical message of we got to run faster, we got to, you know, try harder, all of those things. Those guys just kind of tuned him out for the majority of the year. And by the end of the year, just completely ignored him. And that's why you saw the inconsistency with the running of sets and stuff like that. I just don't believe that the guys ever really believed in Darvin Ham as somebody who they should be listening to, because they didn't feel like they believed in him or he believed in them. And that breakdown was too much to overcome. And it made it all the more predictable, you know, when the season ended, that like it kind of forced the Lakers' hand, because you look at the roster here, and we're going to talk about what comes next here in a second, but you look at the roster, a lot of player options, a lot of guys that the Lakers kind of sort of have no choice but to bring back. And like the roster, yeah, it will probably have some upgrades. I hope it has some upgrades. It needs some upgrades here and there. And maybe they swing big and swing for the fences and go out and get a star, which would require, a complete overhaul of the roster. But as it stands right now, I think one path that the Lakers are taking fairly seriously is a couple upgrades here and there, but bringing back a chunk of that core. And if you are planning on bringing back a chunk of the core, you couldn't bring back the head coach that core doesn't believe in. I also would say with the, even if it isn't like the full core, you're still bringing back Anthony Davis and LeBron, right? You're still going to, like, even if you're, you know, planning on trading Reeves and Rui and whomever for Trae Young or Donovan Mitchell or whatever, you still have to bring a head coach in that Anthony Davis and LeBron James believe in. And I'm here to tell you could see it. Like, this is what I've said all year, right? You could believe my reporting if you want, but you could also see it as plain as day when you're watching these games. LeBron didn't believe in Darvin Ham. Anthony Davis didn't believe in Darvin Ham. And by the end of the season, it was very, very clear that any future that involved those two guys could not also involve Darvin Ham. And so it goes. It's the only call you can make. So where do they go next? Is I'm sure where a lot of people were wondering. I saw that Shams Charania and Jovan and everybody there at The Athletic, and there are put together a list of names already. I can confirm a few of those. I would be shocked if they went down the Coach Bud path. I would be shocked. You can't call an apple rotten and then go and hire the tree, right? Like, you can't, like, that would really, really surprise me. It might happen. He is the most accomplished coach currently on the market, right? But that would really, really surprise me. The other two names that I think have been circled by many are Ty Lue and JJ Redick. And Ty Lue, for obvious reasons, I actually thought for portions of the day today while we were sitting here waiting for them to finally announce this. Again, this has been coming for so long. The article that is running, I got to check and see if it's actually up. But the article that I wrote for Lakers Daily, that was written last Thursday. Like, that was written on either Wednesday or Thursday. It was ready to go up on Wednesday or Thursday. And, we were just, everybody who I spoke to, whether it was internally with the Lakers or those of us who cover the team or anybody around the league, and everybody that I spoke to knew that this decision was coming. It was just a matter of when. And, the same could kind of go for Ty Lue being involved in this list of candidates that the Lakers are going to seriously consider. I believe the Clippers play tonight. Their season could end tonight. Altogether possible that I would even go so far as to say, I don't know, this is speculation on my part, but they're going to have to make a big change in that organization, right? they can't keep doing this. It's that they've been, we get frustrated with how the Lakers have done against one team in the Denver Nuggets, but the entire, like every year, the Clippers have followed the same script. You know, they look good when they're healthy. They're just never healthy. And even when they are healthy in the playoffs, Paul George, you know, whatever, or and right now they're relying on James Harden. We know how that's going to go. Like they have to make some kind of foundational change there. And usually in these spots, the coach is the easiest thing to change. Now, what I kind of wonder, and this is what I'm going to be looking and digging for here in the next few days or in the coming weeks, is we have seen this trend where teams will, you know, they'll fire their head coach and they'll move them into positions higher up in the organization or to consultant jobs elsewhere in the organization. I don't think that's going to happen with Darvin, but I could see that happening with Lou, where Ballmer offers him the bag just to keep him away from the Lakers. I could 100% see it. And it's going to be really interesting to see if that is something that comes to fruition. But if not, I would say that Ty Lue is probably the favorite to step in as head coach of the Lakers, which is all the more ironic given that this is like, had they just hired Ty Lue in the first place, none of this drama with coaching would have happened. I like Frank Vogel. Ty Lue's a better coach. And had they just hired Ty Lue, you still win the championship that you won with Vogel. You maybe win another one because I think LeBron believes more in Lou than he does with Vogel, and certainly more than he believes in Darvin. And, you know, you could have avoided all of this. But remember, the Lakers lowballed Ty. They wanted to force Jason Kidd on Ty. And Lou basically pushed away from the table and went to the Clippers. And so, you know, now that's how things stand here. So if I had to handicap this, if I had to say what the likeliest scenario is here, I would say Lou, if he gets let go by the Clippers, I think the Lakers could basically just not interview other coaches. I think they would, because it is always the wise thing to do, to interview as many people as you can. But he would become like the heavy favorite to be the next Lakers head coach. The other guy that I know has been a very popular name to bring up here has been, or could be, JJ Redick. He does the podcast with LeBron James. LeBron clearly believes in JJ's understanding of the game. Redick has been doing almost like a media tour, like the media car wash that you'll see sometimes happen. And you know, I could see that being something that they pursue. And if they do that, I would be pretty surprised if they hire another first-time head coach, given how it went with Darvin. Nor I'm told that the Lakers are kind of prioritizing experience here. But if they do go that route, please learn from your mistakes with Darvin and go out and get a head coach to you know, help JJ with some of the things that first-time head coaches just aren't going to know about what it takes to be a first-time head coach. I have to run. This piece did, I believe, finally just drop. Nope, still waiting on that. But when it drops, I will come back into the comments here. I'll drop that article into the comments here. There are some super comments that I have to get to. So I will go ahead and play this bad boy. Will I? Yeah. Matthew writing, Jovan said he heard names for a few new coaches, but wanted to wait till Darvin was fired before he put them out there. Do you have names, Anthony? It's the same list of names that The Athletic has. There aren't any surprises there. Kenny Atkinson is an interesting one. I know that the Lakers have, you know, really been a fan of his for a little bit now. All that I ask is that the Lakers cover as many bases with their coaching search as they possibly can. Go out and talk to somebody with more experience. Go out and talk to a first-time head coach, possibly. Go out and talk to Ty Lue and all of those things, and really do your homework on all of this so that you could learn about yourself as well as the person that you're getting ready to hire. Because one thing that the Lakers, I've said for years, is that they're very insulated. They do not hear criticism. Hell, they actively ignore criticism. And when you interview enough people, you learn about yourself. And I think what the Lakers need to learn about themselves is that, like, they're leaving some potential there on the table. So, yeah, that's where I would, you know, maybe begin with this process is just cast a super wide net. Again, I know that I compare the Lakers and Dodgers all the time, but when the Dodgers hired Dave Roberts, they interviewed like 15 people. I was running Dodgers Nation at the time, and I had to write all of those things and summarize all of the candidates that the Dodgers were talking to at the time. And I thought, the right process. And say what you will about Dave Roberts. I don't think he's a perfect head coach, but he's certainly perfect manager, but he's certainly been great for the Dodgers. He's objectively great, at least in the regular season. And that relationship has been very fruitful. And I think that's something that the Lakers need to find here with their next coach. Benjamin G, given his quotes, both READ and most recently with AR, it's hard for me to give him leeway. In my experience, if someone's go-to is blaming others, it wouldn't have mattered who he had on his bench. You know what? That's a great point. Honestly, they could have, you know, tooled him with a coach with more experience, and it might not have mattered because Darvin was too stubborn to listen. And, you know, maybe that's how this goes anyway. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lowdown podcast. A ton more to come on this, because this coaching search is going to be, very involved as a process. We have player reviews to look back on. We have free agency previews and personnel decisions that we'll look ahead to as well. And we're going to dive on into that with 100% effort or whatever it is. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you next.